Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, so the news today, of course, is what's happening with jobs. Looks like we got a reversal here, the beginning of the relapse, economic relapse, maybe a double dip in the recession, a W-shape confirmed, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what's happening with jobs? And then I want to talk about where we stand with the negotiations on the follow-on fiscal stimulus bill called the HEROES Act. You know, we had the CARES Act and a few addenda there in spring. Clearly did not stimulate the economy. It wasn't meant to. It was actually just a mitigation bill, as they called it. Well, the mitigation's over. The money's been spent or not by business. We'll explain that a little bit. So now they need the stimulus more than ever, because now the second virus wave or whatever, resurge, whatever you want to call it, worse than the first, worse than March, April even, we got shutdowns going on again, partial shutdowns, particularly in the services area, which has been the job area that's been the hardest hit. And of course, hardest hit means it's hit minority workers the most, the worst. They're the ones taking it in the ear, both in terms of employment and in terms of susceptibility to infections and worse. Okay, so we'll talk about that, the HEROES Act. What's the status of negotiations there? And then I want to talk about what to beware of in terms of how business is gaming the bailouts. We've got some ideas here from what we've seen with the CARES Act so far. And Republicans want to open even more doors to allow them to game and manipulate and exploit the current bailout being negotiated, i.e. the HEROES Act. You know, it's a big question. Will the HEROES Act actually be a stimulus, a fiscal stimulus, or will it be so weak that it actually fails in that regard? You know, the CARES Act could not be a stimulus. It was just designed to put a floor under the collapse that was going on. Well, it was a floor with some planks taken out. Or not even put back in, I guess. So we haven't really had a stimulus yet, you see. There's been no real stimulus to the U.S. economy. The CARES Act, filled part of the hole that was made. The hole would have been deeper, but it's still a hole. So now they got to stimulate the economy. In other words, stimulus means you not only make up for the loss of income and economic activity, but you add to that. You got to fill more of the hole than the hole itself if you want a stimulus. You just can't fill the hole because that leaves you with no growth. Keeps you from collapsing further, but it doesn't really allow you to dig out of the hole. So a fiscal stimulus means more than what you've lost, or you don't have a stimulus, you see. You need more than what you lost to keep it going, to keep the economy growing to a kind of self-sustaining trajectory. And we're nowhere near that. Okay, let's look at the jobs picture, because it's the canary in the coal mine. The jobs picture, it's a harbinger of what's happening with the rest of the economy. the first Friday in August, we'll get a better picture of what's happening to jobs in July, where very clearly, you know, they opened up the economy in May in some states, particularly in the South, and in June, places like California. And simply people going back to work, you know, gave you a rebound in economic activity. Okay, so you got a rebound, which is not a recovery. See, a rebound is just a temporary reversal of the direction of the contraction, i.e. the recession, temporary. That's a rebound. Recovery is a sustained growth path. That's a recovery. And of course, the politicians put the big spin on the rebound, saying, oh, it was recovery. Well, I kept saying, no, it's just a rebound. There's the difference between a rebound. Rebounds can relapse. And by the middle of July, it was pretty clear, both in terms of jobs and in terms of retail sales and consumer spending and other indicators, that the rebound had plateaued by early middle July. And now it's become increasingly clear that we're slipping into a relapse. You see, that's what a W-shaped recovery I've been talking about since March is really about. All great recessions follow W-shaped recoveries. Short, shallow rebounds followed by brief, moderate relapses. And you just bounce along the bottom for months and years that way. That's a W shape. That's a great recession. Now, as I talked about in my article last week, what lies ahead, a great recession with a W-shaped recovery, weak recovery, can slip into a Great Depression. What that requires, though, is a collapse of the financial system. And as I talked about in that article, go read it on my blog, jackrasmus.com, if you haven't, what I talked about was the forces potentially leading to a financial crash on top of this in early 2021 are growing. And that's indicated by the defaults and bankruptcies, both of businesses and households, consumers, and even states and cities. That's the predictor, you see. Defaults and bankruptcies. And that's growing. What could also precipitate this is extreme political instability. Causes businesses and consumers to freeze up. And recent developments by the Trump administration are pointing in that direction, of course, you know, unleashing the new federal SWAT teams all over the country to create a crisis of law and order so that he can claim he's a law and order president and get his base to turn out to vote for him or scare others from turning out to vote. You know, we already got an issue with voting in this country. We got widespread voter suppression going on in at least a couple dozen states. Most of them, all of them virtually are Trump-based states, red states, whatever, in the South, some Midwest. Yeah, that's been growing steadily for years now, and that's going to be a real problem. Now, the COVID's going to be a real problem as well. If we have another wave and it's even worse and it seems like it's growing into that. You know, most of the polling stations are manned by retirees. Do you really think that they're going to come out and man those polling stations? No. So that's convenient for Republicans who don't want turnout. to consolidate the polling stations, which means even longer lines at the polling stations. That's on top of voter suppression. That's denying people, even if they tried to show up to vote, the ability to vote. And on top of that, Trump is preparing this, it's all fraud because of the mail-in ballots, even though the guy's voted mail-in himself many times. You see? And if the election is close, he then declares, no, it's fraud. Oh, people stood in long lines, didn't get the vote. Oh, irregularities. And then what does he do? He throws it to the Supreme Court. Said, you guys decide. You decided in 2000. Remember that? George W. Bush versus Gore in Florida claimed 100,000 or more votes were felonies, were by felonious voters, in other words, didn't have the right to vote. Over 50,000, I think they claim, were people with felonies that didn't have the right to vote. And they discounted those votes, you see. All the attention, you know, publicly was on these, shards or shads or whatever on votes in southern Florida County. But the real issue was they denied 50,000 people the vote. And then investigations after it proved that these people weren't felonies. Didn't have 50,000 people challenged as having felonies that never did. Well, that would have swung that state, you know. So they threw it into the Supreme Court, which voted on behalf of Bush, and that's how he got in. Well, you don't think they're trying to figure another angle similar to that? I mean, they even got a more solid majority in the Supreme Court today. Yeah, so voter suppression, you know, dampened the turnout with the virus, and on top of the virus, create political chaos and instability, discourage people from coming in to vote even more by sending the federal DHS SWAT teams into the cities. You know, only the Democrat cities, of course, right? Make the Democrat governors look like they're incompetent. That's the strategy. There's a few other things he's got going for him, his partnership with Kanye West, the black millionaire entertainment, whatever the hell his background is, right? He's running for president, and he's filing in the states where there's large black votes. He wants to suck off the black votes from the Democrats, reduce the turnout in a sense, right? And give, like Michigan, you know, Michigan and Pennsylvania, places like that. So that's the Trump strategy here, you see. And the SWAT teams are a big part of it, right? Create chaos. Okay, so I got off on a political tangent. But to the extent that we have an economic wave here, a relapse, recession, you know, creates more chaos as well. Okay, so let's get back to jobs. Get back to the jobs picture here. Three things I want to talk about today. You know, the jobs picture, the negotiations, preliminary negotiations on the HEROES Act, and how the prior CARES Act was gamed by business, and how we better watch out here, because Mitch McConnell is going to give his buddies even more money, free money. Okay, so the report yesterday was new filings for unemployment benefits rose 100,000 to 1.4 million. New filings, first time filings for unemployment benefits. Okay. How many people have filed for unemployment benefits since this thing began back in March, early March? 52.7 million people have filed for unemployment benefits. 52 plus million people on benefits. That's a third, virtually almost a third of the labor force, the workforce in this country, has been unemployed at some point. And actually, it's more than that, because you got to add another 8 million people who dropped out of the labor force, gave up looking for work. They're not counted in the labor force calculation and the unemployment calculation. 8 million people gave up, dropped out. These figures are all from the Labor Department, by the way, their monthly employment situation report. So you got to add those. So maybe 60 million people jobless? 60 million? I mean, that's like 35% of the labor force. I mean, even the depths of the Great Depression in 32, 33, it was 25%. Clearly more. Okay, so let's just look further at these job numbers. Okay, 1.4 million new unemployment filings. That's not the total. That's just the state unemployment, the traditional pre-existing unemployment benefit system. 1.4 million, up from 1.3. You got to add another nearly a million more filing for new benefits here under this federal supplemental program called the PUC, Pandemic Unemployment Program, Benefits Program. You know, freelancers, gig workers, independent contractors, and so forth, of which we've got well over 10 million in this country, 10, 20 million people working in that category. Okay, so they filed 975,000 last week new PUC unemployment filings, up from about 940,000-950,000 previous week. Constant. How many people now are on these special benefits, which is the $600 a month supplement, you see? How many? 14 million people on the supplement, getting the $600 extra. 14 million. Big number. Goes away in a week. 14 million people are going to have their income, spendable income, reduced by $600. That's going to be a whack to the recovery. Enhance the relapse. Increase the likelihood of a double dip recession. Solidify the W-shaped trajectory of the recovery. So, you know, you take the 1.4 million and the 975,000 new filings last week alone, 2.4 million, which is an increase over the previous prior weeks. It's the first increase, weekly increase in benefit filings since March. You know, we had the big March-April impact. At one point, we had 6.5 million people in 1 week filing for unemployment. I think that was early April. And then it steadily has gone down, the weekly filings. But it's never been under a million for the state program. And I think it's never been under 900,000 for the federal program. So it's always been over 2 million new filings for unemployment benefits every week. 18 consecutive weeks of more than 2 million people newly filing for unemployment benefits. Now, it's true, in some places, the flat $600 enables some folks to make more than what they were making. You know, go to places like Mississippi. You know what the max unemployment benefit you could get in Mississippi? $235 a month. And in some places, as low as $100 a week. Starvation wages. starvation benefits. You can hardly call them. You see, the states are able to determine how much they want to give in their unemployment benefits programs. You go to Washington State, you get pretty good. You get over half, maybe even more. I don't know. California, the max is $450 a week. Mississippi, $235. You know, it's ironic that the red states, the South, are the states where the unemployment benefits, you know, are the stingiest. And yes, you give people $600. They're going to be making pretty darn close to what they were making. And most of those folks are on minimum wage. You know, and if you're a restaurant worker, you get less than minimum wage. So the $600 is a good boost. And by the way, studies show that the folks who are getting the $600 are not only spending as much as they were before when they were working, they're actually spending more. You know, it's holding up consumption, which is plateauing off nonetheless, but it's kept consumption from a massive collapse in this country, which is coming to an end in 1 week, you see. They're not even, Democrats, Republicans, aren't even close to a deal. So what happens after July 31st for these folks? Well, nothing good, that's for sure. So we've got this resurge in joblessness, which is caused by two things, basically. One is the new shutdowns in a number of states. 38 states, by the way, are showing a significant resurgence of virus infections. And then with a lag, you get hospitalizations going up and ICU units going up, and then the death rate goes up. 70,000 a day at one point. And we're still over 60,000 a day, I think. Places like Florida, 15,000 a day. Now, that's only those who get sick enough to report it, you know. As we know, with this virus, a lot of people get sick and they don't have much in terms of symptoms. And in fact, it just came out that the infection rate is probably 20 times more than the 4 million reported, or at least 10 times. I'm not sure what that number is, but it's magnitudes. And a lot of them are walking around giving it to everybody else and don't know it because we don't have testing. You see, if we had good testing, we would know, you know, all the asymptomatic people. Require everybody to get tested, you know, every twice a week at least. Everybody should be tested. That's what they've done in South Korea and places like that where it's totally under control. Okay, so 38 states, new shutdowns. That's driving some of the rise in unemployment claims and jobless. Because the number of unemployment claims is not the true number of total unemployed, you see, because a lot of people aren't eligible for it. Or they drop out of the labor force and they're not eligible for it. If you exhausted your unemployment benefits, well, you're not going to show up. You're going to show up that those who are continuing to get unemployment benefits is declining. And that's true. Continuing benefits are declining, while we got a rise in new benefits claims. Well, how could that happen? Well, because people are running out of unemployment benefits. That's why. We're bringing people in the front, adding to them, and we've got a hole in the back, and they're leaving. Now, look at these numbers here. In June, for June, reported in early July by the government, 4.8 million new jobs. 4.8 million. 3 million were retail and restaurant and similar jobs. Those are the jobs that are being relaid off right now. Those are the folks who are reapplying for first-time benefits, again, as they get laid off. 3 million of the 4.8 million were the most susceptible industries and occupations, and those are being whacked again. And, you know, those who came back to work since March, April, those who came back to work, over half of them were part-time temp workers. Over half of them. In other words, yeah, the government brought them back. I mean, employers brought them back. But you know what? They brought them back as part-time and temp because they weren't sure whether they were going to keep them all the time. They weren't sure whether they were going to keep them employed. So they brought them back part-time temps. It's easier to get rid of them, you see, when they're part-time temp. And that's what they did. Now they're getting rid of them. So we have 52.7 million, having filed for unemployment benefits since the beginning of this, over a third of the workforce. 32 million are still getting benefits, 32 million. 14 million of those getting the $600. So where's the other 20 million? 52 million signed up, 32 million still getting. That's a 20 million difference. Where's the other 20 million? Well, 8 million came back to work. Another 6 million dropped out of the labor force altogether. So that's 14 of the 20 million difference. And probably 5 to 6 million exhausted their unemployment benefits. Roughly, you know, these are rough. We know 8 million came back to work. About half part-time, another half full-time. So those are the real numbers you got to look at. 52.7 million people on benefits, 32 million still after 4 months. 6 to 8 million dropped out of the labor force. Only 8 million jobs created, and now we're losing those. Is that a picture of recovery? Not at all. That's a picture of a weak rebound. A weak rebound. Now, the problem is not just the virus surging and reclosing, shutting down, particularly service businesses, you know, or people not going out, reducing their public activity, you know, and spending less, retail, so forth. But now we've got coming behind this. You see, big businesses see this happening. And now they're saying, right away, J.P. Morgan Chase saying, oh, it looks like we may have a W-shaped recovery. A weak recovery. And so our Federal Reserve governors admitting, oh, you know, this looks like a protracted, long recovery, which is just a cover way of saying W-shaped, right? But now we got big business who see this picture. They see this picture of a very poor response economically and the fact that the virus is not being dealt with and resurging. New layoffs occurring. And they're saying, well, it's a long-term picture, and you know, it doesn't look to us like there's going to be an early recovery. We're going to have to plan some big layoffs. We're going to have to really bat down the hatches and really restructure and prepare for the new normal, which is very weak consumption and growth going forward, and a government stimulus that doesn't look that stimulating. So we're going to start laying off. You know, United Airlines, 36,000 layoffs announced starting September. American, 25,000. all these big retail companies shutting down thousands of stores as we talk, or even filing for bankruptcy. You know, I mentioned some of them last week, a whole host of them in retail, and you're not hearing about all the defaults and bankruptcies going on in the oil fracking patch, you know, in the Northern Plains and in Texas. Big layoffs there. And that was a source of major job creation prior to this. That's gone south. Hotels and casinos, entertainment companies. You don't hear about the strip mall service and retail companies, do you? Oh, they're going under. Well, I think I had seen in June, I saw, you know, a survey of, Yelp did a survey of its base and found, you know, tens of thousands of, well, maybe 45,000 or 130,000. I'm not sure which one of the companies that shut for good. And Harvard did a study, 110,000 shut for good, shut down for good, and more are going to shut down now. You know, this PPP program is supposed to keep the small businesses afloat. Yeah. Well, it was gamed by a lot of larger businesses, stole a lot of the money. And now they had to add a supplement. And even that supplement is not getting out the way it works. Look, you know, restaurants and small businesses, retail businesses account for 44% of all the jobs provided by small business. And there's millions, tens of millions of jobs provided by small business, 44%. What percent of the PPP loans did restaurants and small business, retail businesses get? What percent? 10% of the loans, 10% of the $520 billion paid out already under the PPE. Went to companies, small businesses that provide 44% of the jobs. Now, don't tell me it's not being gamed by bigger companies with the help of their banking buddies. Because, you know, all this money virtually goes through the banks, the big banks. So, you know, it hasn't been all that effective for a lot of small businesses. And now the small businesses got to shut down again. Doesn't look good. Defaults, bankruptcies. And now if they don't come up with, and it doesn't look like there's any agreement in the HEROES negotiations, if they don't come up with aids to states and cities starting next month, August, cities are going to be planning mass layoffs of their own. Because their expenses have gone through the roof and there's no revenue coming in. They're going to start laying off a lot of people on top of the services relayoffs, on top of the big corporations restructuring and announcing tens of thousands of worker layoffs. Mass unemployment. We're definitely heading into a W dip. Well, let's talk about the HEROES negotiations, the HEROES bill. Okay, so the Democrats had passed already their bill, I think in June, calling for $3 trillion in stimulus. And a lot of the provisions would have been, or are, in that House version, actual fiscal stimulus. And they would continue the $1,200, actually improve it for dependents, $1,200 checks, supplemental income checks, and they would continue the $600 supplemental unemployment benefits. By the way, how did they come up with $600? What was that? Well, it was considered the average additional unemployment benefit necessary on average to ensure a full wage income, the equivalent of wage income for workers who have lost their job because of the pandemic, the $600 on average. Okay, so that meant on average, that meant some workers in states like Mississippi would get more, and some workers in states like New York and California would not, even with the $600, have enough to restore all their lost income. Maybe it would be 75 or 80% of it. That was how they came up with the $600. And the South benefited. And the South keeps supporting Republican politicians who want to take it away. You know, if you look at the states, what states benefit the most from government money and what states pay in more to the government than they get from the government, the southern states get far more than all the other states. California, New York, and others pay into the government more than they get in terms of programs and benefits. The southern states benefit. Well, the southern states, though, you know, don't like big government, right? At least the white folks in the southern states, there are a lot of them. You know, the South won the Civil War, folks. Yeah, they won the Civil War. They were defeated on the battlefield, but that culture and those values were never defeated. And they spread throughout the rest of the country in the 20th century. There are islands of progressive fight back throughout the South, no doubt about it, focused around, largely around African-American groups and populations. But the South, you know, the Reconstruction was all designed to change, the Reconstruction following the Civil War, to change the culture and the society in the South. But the Reconstruction was suspended 90 years too soon. Yeah, it lasted about a decade, and then the Democrats cut a deal with the Republicans to stay in office in 1876, and that was the end of Reconstruction. And then, of course, what immediately followed that was in subsequent decades, this big glorification of the Southern Confederacy. A lot of these statues being pulled down now were only really put up in the 1880s, 1890s. Yeah, glorification of the damn traitors who took up arms against the United States, even though the military ones had agreed to an oath when they became officers in the U.S. military before the Civil War. They took an oath to defend the Constitution and not to take up arms. And then they went and did it. And then they got statues put up everywhere. Yeah. Traitors. What other country has statues to traitors? I don't know of any in its midst. Huh? Oh, they ought to tear every one of those things down, break them up, and use them for landfill. Okay, that's a tangent. Let's go back to the heroes negotiation. What's in? What's the status right now of the negotiations? Well, the Democrats have $3 trillion. A lot of elements are very, very much a stimulus. Continue the $600. Continue the $1,200. And in fact, more for dependents. $100 billion for rental assistance. Very important. In fact, I think even a national renter business association supports that, $100 billion, because they know they'll get it, you see. It'll be paid by the government to them. Because right now it's just a rental moratorium on evictions, which runs out today, last day, the moratorium on rent evictions. 110 million people in this country are renters. 110 million. I've seen estimates back in May, I don't know how true they are today, that 23 million people are potentially evictable you know, those who live in apartment complexes, and I think there's some other conditions if you're not in an apartment complex where you cannot be evicted. Well, we know that people are being evicted, and in fact, evictions now are accelerating in July. Now, who owns these apartment complexes? You know, hedge funds, equity firms, shadow bankers, you know. Blackstone, I think, is a big owner of apartment buildings now. Big shadow bank, Blackstone. Yeah, these are the guys who, you know, they're loaded. Okay, so 23 million. I think the New York Times said 12.5 million. Well, give or take millions, you know. Going to be thrown out on the streets here starting next week, already in the process. Especially in states, you know, like Texas and Arizona and so forth. This is where it's among the worst of the evictions already going on. So you're going to take away people's, Republicans want to reduce or take away the $600 supplemental unemployment as more people are becoming unemployed. And you're going to get more evictions. You're going to get more people unable to pay. I saw a statistic that said in April, one-third of the 110 million people could not pay their rent, probably because a lot of them weren't getting their unemployment benefits yet. One-third. So we're talking about tens of millions of people, you know, who might get evicted or potentially evictable. Are we going to throw those people out in the street? We already got a homeless problem. You know, I've seen recently in L.A. alone, potentially 365,000 evictions in L.A. alone. Santa Clara County, the heart of Silicon Valley, 45,000. Where are these people going to go? Huh? This is a big problem. The rental assistance thing is a big problem. Okay, so that's part of the rental assistance, $100 billion in the Democrat Heroes Act. And, you know, a lot more money, billions more for testing and for schools, you know, a whole number of areas where desperately, and also $1 billion for state and local governments, $1 billion. That's in the Democrat Heroes Act. A recent study said $969 billion is going to be needed here for the rest of the year and early next year for state and local governments to keep them from going bankrupt, from defaulting. Now, Mitch McConnell, he doesn't seem to care, right? Oh, because those that are in worst state and potential for default are the blue states. So he wants to make sure the blue states feel the heat or let them go to the municipal bond market and borrow more money, you see. Mitch doesn't want to bail them out. He only wants to bail out his big corporate buddies and investors. That's what the Republicans want. And those folks, the big investors, are fat. They're in Fat City. They're sitting on $3 trillion of cash. They don't need any more money. I mean, just look at the two tiers of business loans available under the CARES Act. You know, we got the PPP program, $660 billion for small businesses. And then we have another $600 billion in what's called the Main Street program for medium-sized and other kinds of businesses, Main Street. And then we have the big corporations. The big corporations bailout, $500 billion. So how much has been spent or borrowed and therefore invested in the economy to create jobs by big business and medium-sized business. How much of that $1.1 trillion additional over and above the $500 billion in the CARES Act for unemployment and checks, over and above the $660 billion for small business PPP program, there's $1.1 trillion to go to medium and large businesses. How much have they spent? How much have they borrowed? Barely $100 billion. There's like $1 trillion sitting there waiting for them, allocated to them to be borrowed to invest and create jobs. They're not doing it. Why? Because they're sitting on $3 trillion of cash that they've accumulated through various means other than borrowing the money from the government. The most lucrative, of course, has been the $1.3 trillion at least in new bonds, new corporate bond issues that they've issued. Big businesses have sold $1.3 trillion, a record, in just 5 months, equal to all of 2019. In 5 months, raising corporate bonds. That's cash, right? They suspended their dividend payouts during those 5 months, which last year was amounted to at least $200-300 billion in dividend and stock buybacks. They suspended those. So that's cash they kept on hand. They borrowed credit lines from their banks, another couple hundred billion. They've sold off some of their assets they don't need as they restructure. Who knows how much more? If you look at the statistics, how much has business increased its deposits in the first half of this year in commercial banks alone? $2.2 trillion of greater deposits by the bank, by big corporations in the commercial banks. How much in non-commercial banks did they plow? Shadow banks, right? Equity, hedge funds. How much did they park there? How much more did they park offshore? We don't know. But they're sitting on a cash. Or how much did they put into short-term securities that they can convert the cash immediately? We don't know. Well, we do know a lot of it has also flowed into the stock market. Yeah, they've bought safe stocks, blue chip stocks, which they think they can sell, which they can quickly. $3 trillion, a cash hoard. Well, no wonder they don't need the $1.1 trillion from the CARES Act. I mean, that's like an emergency. Maybe we'll take that later. But right now, we're not going to take it. We got enough cash. And, you know, that's why McConnell and friends, these are the people who pay for their re-elections, you see, say, oh, well, gee, you know, let's not rush into more stimulus because their big buddies are fat and they don't need it. So they think, well, we don't really need it, right? Or are they going to go light on extending unemployment benefits or whatever? I mean, that's what's behind this. Read my article, What Lies Ahead. I talk about the cash hoard that's been accumulated by big businesses. They're doing fine, except for those businesses that are obviously in those sectors that are hard hit, like the airlines, right, and the cruise lines, right, and the fracking companies. Those are the ones that are in trouble, that are defaulting and going bankrupt. But the rest of big business is doing very well. They don't need any more. Okay, so what's being proposed on the Republican side in the HEROES Act? What's being proposed? Well, what they're proposing is to throw another $200 billion at small business. You know, $660 billion, of which only $520 billion has actually been loaned out. And a lot of that, not to those who really need it in small business. You know, they came out a report. Let me digress here. They came out a report on who's gotten the money of the $525 billion, right? And they're only reporting on part of, actually only 13% of the companies that got the loans. They reported 13%. So 87% is still a secret. Who got it? Yeah, that was their report. A lot of gaming going on. And they're going to throw $200 billion more into that pot. And they're going to allow companies that got a first round on the PPP program to have a second round if they need it. Need it, by the way, is, you know, you got to show revenue loss. A lot of them who got that had no revenue loss. And the new rules for the extra $200 billion for PPP will be more, quote, flexible. In other words, they won't have to use it for wage retention. The loan will be automatically a grant. And they won't have to really prove revenue loss. So they're just throwing another $200 billion into the pot and say, okay, come and grab it. Income checks, you know, the $1,200, according to Republican. These are preliminary indications coming out. You know, the summaries were circulated to certain people in Congress that leaked out. Republicans haven't really put this on the table yet. They're supposed to do this next week. We'll see. Income checks. The first round of income checks here where eligible people, families with 75,000 annual income would get the full 1,200, and you get partial up to 99,000 annual income. So 100,000 and below were eligible to receive the checks. Well, now Republicans want to reduce it to 40,000 or below. Only, you know, those who are making 40,000 would get the second round of checks. So, you know, increase for small business, $200 billion, but cut it for households. And cut households $600 supplemental unemployment. The 14 million getting $600, reduce it to, on average, $200. So take away $400, right? Make it look more like Mississippi than California. On top of that, what it appears is a business liability relief is a measure that McConnell and Republicans are pushing. Business liability relief. What is that? Oh, well, what they're saying is you can't sue a company if it brings you back to work and you get sick, or if you're a customer and you go into the restaurant and you get sick, you can't sue the company. But I'll bet you this release of liability is going to be much broader than just the COVID-related illnesses. Much broader. Do whatever you want. For example, if you don't hire people back or you pay them less than minimum wage, are you liable to be sued by your workers? Or if the working conditions are such, unrelated to COVID, just bad working conditions and you get injured, are you released from liability? You betcha. You watch that. Read the fine print on that business liability release, because something will happen there. But it'll be broader than just healthcare. Now, a provision that's not in the Senate Republican version is the payroll tax. Trump wanted business to be relieved from the payroll tax. You know, the mainstream press is really, you know, really sneaky when you think about it, because it's very clear that business already got a payroll tax cut, relief total, in the CARES Act in March. They're not paying payroll tax now. Ah, but there is a provision in the March CARES Act which says that It's deferred. They don't pay it now. It's deferred. They got to pay it back. Kind of like people, you know, who got rental evictions assistance or mortgage forbearance, right? They got to pay that back, right? You're maybe not paying the mortgage now, or you don't have to pay rent now, but you got to come up with some arrangement on the back end or some way that you repay what you're not paying now from rent and mortgage, you see? So it was the same thing with the payroll tax cut for business. It's only deferred. They got to pay it back sometime, part of it before the end of this year and part of it before the end of 2021. So a payroll tax cut is already there, just deferred. But Trump wanted to make it permanent. In other words, you never got to have to pay it back. Well, even Mitch McConnell couldn't swallow that one. Well, he knew it wouldn't fly with the Democrats. Okay, so there's also schools, $105 billion to help schools, which is going to be chaos, you know. And the schools thing is tied up with the child care thing, right? If people, you know, if all the schooling is remote, homeschooling, then two-paycheck working-class families are going to have to choose, right? Do I not work and school my kids, or do I go to work and there's nobody to school my six-year-old, first grader, right? I got to get a nanny or daycare. Well, that doesn't mean the nanny, a daycare person can oversee the schooling of the remote learning for a, you know, first grader. I mean, this is going to cause a lot of anger and consternation. Well, Trump says, everyone should go back to school. Well, wait a minute, folks, you know, now it's coming out that children as young as 10 years old can be asymptomatic carriers and spread this stuff. And even there was this location in Texas, I think, where 85 babies less than 1 year old had the virus. Now, it doesn't show up as much, but they are still carriers. Right? And there's 1.6 million teachers over age 50. You think they want to go back to school and catch it from the kids? I don't know what the answer here is, but it's certainly not just sending everyone back to school. But the answer also is we better put a lot of money into childcare and come up with some kind of assistance, particularly for minority households, which really don't have the facilities and the equipment really to do remote learning. Big problem, big problem. Okay, so that's in this Republican version. We'll see next week what it really looks like even further. And we'll be reporting on very closely on what the HEROES Act negotiations is and the W-shaped relapse, double dip recession that's on its way.